I think the funniest thing to me is that people think it's crazy that people live in tiny houses like this. And I was like, well, you just got out of college and the whole time you're living in like less square footage per person and no one thinks that's crazy. So
welcome to the Tiny House Lifestyle Podcast, the show where you learn how to plan, build, and live the tiny lifestyle. I'm your host, Ethan Waldman, and this is episode 107 with Sophia and Henry Jungbauer. Henry and Sophia are currently living in their self-designed and built 28-foot tiny house on wheels in northern Minnesota, where they experience a full range of seasons, including a very cold and long winter. We start with an in-depth discussion about how they're staying warm in their tiny house and also how they're preventing their water from freezing both on the way in and on the way out. If you're thinking about living tiny in a cold climate, this is not to be missed. From there, we turn to rethinking the American dream and a discussion about values, lifestyle, and where a tiny house fits in for a young couple. It's a great conversation, and I hope you stick around. Are you fascinated by the tiny lifestyle but not sure if living in one is for you? Relax and let your tiny dreams run wild while you color 15 unique tiny homes inside and out. Coloring is a perfect activity for being stuck at home, especially after you've watched everything on Netflix. The Color Me Tiny coloring book includes a variety of tiny houses on wheels and the beautiful nature that surrounds them. The images all come from real photos that highlight the broad range of tiny house shapes and sizes. Each featured home also includes an interior scene to show what it's like to live in a tiny house day after day. So, if you want to color a tiny Vardo on the beach, a cozy tiny house on wheels nestled in the snow, or several homes that feature their four-legged occupants, Color Me Tiny is for you. Color Me Tiny is on sale for just $9.99 and ships free via Amazon Prime. You can learn more at thetinyhouse.net/color. Again, that's thetinyhouse.net/color. All right, I am here with Henry and Sophia Jungbauer. Henry and Sophia are currently living in their self-designed and built 28-foot tiny house on wheels in northern Minnesota. Their goal in going tiny was to lead a more sustainable lifestyle and live more intentionally while sharing their journey along the way. What started as a dream, after writing her senior paper on the tiny house movement in 2015, Sophia and Henry are so excited to be living in their tiny house and hope to inspire others by living out their values. They challenge you to explore how culture influences your life and to rethink what achieving the American dream can look like. Henry and Sophia, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hey, Ethan. Thanks for having us.
You're very welcome. It's great to finally have you on the show because I've kind of been watching your build take shape for a while, and now it's just fun to get to see you living in your tiny house. How's it been going?
Good. Great.
Yeah, it's been an adventure for sure. I think we like to joke. I think we moved in at a good time. We moved in at the end of August, and winter really starts kind of November here. So I like to say, once you make it through the winter, the rest of the summer will be smooth sailing. So we've kind of figured out
the most difficult part, hopefully, of
living in a northern climate, I guess.
Yeah.
Right. So you're in your first winter, and I will assume that northern Minnesota is quite cold. How's it been going? Have your systems been holding up? Have you figured any problems out at unopportune times?
Well, this has actually been a pretty mild winter, I think, for Norm. But we ran into one problem when we were gone over a weekend. We knew it had been, it was going to be about 35 below, I think, for the weekend. And so at one point we had been using the main concern is our plumbing in our bathroom. It's the only plumbing that's actually in the studs. You know, it's cut holes through the studs for that plumbing versus everything being inside the house in the conditioned space. And so leaving the sink running just a light drip, like a decent drip in the bathroom sink, just to keep that water moving, keep it from freezing, was the general idea. And that was a good idea.
But what ended up happening is, so we had moved the house in at the end of August. So then probably, I think about 2 months in, we decided it was time to level it. So we leveled the house.
It was about three inches.
Yeah, so it had settled a little bit and was a little bit off level. So we finally got around to leveling it. But at that point, we obviously already hooked up our plumbing line.
Yeah, the drain
line. The septic, so our gray water. When we leveled it, we didn't realize we were actually changing the angle. So not only did we have water running quite slowly, but it was not a very...
Well, basically, there was a couple support places where it had blocks. And yeah, it made it basically flat. There's kind of like a flat spot right in the middle of the drain line. And so that really slow trickle wasn't able to drain at all once it got to that point. And so it just slowly froze and then built up and then froze our whole drain line. Yeah. So we had about...
It was a fun week, but we figured that one out.
A week before we were able to get that thud, so...
Wow. But it didn't... You didn't get water spilling into the house, did you?
Well, what happened... I'll tell the story. So we got home and the water had been running. And at that point, nothing was actually bad happening other than it was freezing. But the plumbing... chase, so everything that goes into the plumbing goes to one spot, and we have a mini split and a propane on-demand water heater, which both have condensation or condensate lines, and so those also go into the drain, and that's not entirely capped.
It's just an open P-trap. It's an open P-trap with a tube that goes up, so then both these can just run into the same spot, and so it backed up, and then it came through that.
So we got home and we turned on the water and let some water down to go down the drain. And all of a sudden I start hearing this beeping.
We haven't heard before.
So we walked in the bathroom. There's water coming because the water basically just backed up and then was coming out.
So it's slowly running out. So we have a faux wall in front of our plumbing stack and our hot water heater. And so, yeah, that's where that stack is. And so we just saw some water slowly coming out of there. So basically it had gone underneath our shower. So just sitting on top of the OSB there and then just slowly coming out underneath into the rest of the space. So,
but that didn't happen until we got home and let water out. So as soon as we knew there was a problem, I turned off the water. So we were able to catch it pretty quickly. But we bought Honeywell. They're like water detection leaks. So that's what the beeping was. They're just like a small... I think probably like a $5 alarm.
So if it's sitting in water, it'll beep. So that's what alerted us. We would have found it out pretty quickly.
Where was it placed that it started, that it detected the alarm?
I think we put that one under the shower because
that was just sitting by the stack there. So it was
under the shower that we moved it under the stack. But our shower, we have a HEPA valve. I don't know if you've heard of those. So basically it gives you more clearance. So that you don't have to have quite as much clearance as a traditional P-trap. And because we knew we were going to be in such a cold climate, we moved the plumbing for the shower up. So that's why we used a HEPA.
It's not in the floor. It's in the conditioned space underneath the shower.
Yeah. I actually use the same one in my tiny. Do you find that you need to give it a little bit of hot water before a shower to like get it unfrozen?
Only one time. One time where it was just like, I was like, oh. And then we realized pretty quickly that it fixed itself almost immediately.
Yeah. Sometimes the little flaps in there are a little cold.
Yeah.
Just the one time, though.
Yeah. So how are you, since this is a major challenge in the cold weather, how are you keeping your water from freezing on the way into the house?
So we were really lucky where we are parked. Our landowners, when they bought the land, it was kind of set up for RVs. And so they've had tiny houses here before. So they have kind of figured out some systems for us that we didn't have to figure out. And basically, in the summer months, we're connected just like an RV. There's like a spigot right out front. But in the winter, they actually run the hot water, or it's a hose that is heated that comes directly like from a conditioned area. So the only problem with that is, one, you're using a lot of electricity to keep it heated. And then we actually have problems having cold water because the whole way it's been heated, and so we've kind of figured out just put some water in the fridge. But And then we have kind of like an insulation cap on the inlet. So I think our biggest concern while we were building the house was worrying about keeping our pipes unfrozen. But really the only issues we had is the inlet freezing on us twice and the drain freezing, which basically we bought some heat tape. So we probably won't do it because now we're in March, but next year we'll just have that attached. And if it ever freezes,
you just plug it in and turn it on. That's actually a really smart idea. We clogged up the drains in the tiny house a couple winters ago during like really sub-zero temperatures and really deep snowpack. And I basically like the tiny house, the snow sheds off the roof and creates these big like snow berms. Yep. And so I felt like a penguin. I basically like slid down the snow berm on my stomach with a headlamp to get under the house.
Yeah,
and
we
then
did
like
that.
Like, luckily we had a plug under there because we do have some heat tape somewhere else. And so I was able to just bring a hairdryer under there and like manually thaw out the drain. But putting some heat tape there, not turning it on, that's actually a brilliant idea because then you're just preemptively, you're just ready for it to freeze.
Yep. Right. Yeah. Well, we had a heat gun and we were under there. Sophie spent, I think, at least 2 hours the one day.
Yeah.
I spent about 3 hours the next day.
No.
The problem was
it was it was pretty thorough.
We didn't know where it froze, well, so it was kind of just the whole
thing. Ethan, what size, or do you know what the diameter of your drain pipe is?
You know, it's been a long time since I did that plumbing, but it's not
that, it's probably a little bit smaller.
The part that froze wasn't the main drain. It was basically my sink and shower exit the house, and then they meet a bigger drain line.
Gotcha.
And the place where it froze was my wife Anne, wanting to conserve water in a very like responsible way. We washed a bunch of dishes at night, and the sink was full of the dishwater, and we knew we were gonna have breakfast in the morning, and like, why not save some water? So she left the sink just plugged with a bunch of water in it. But unfortunately, the plug isn't like a 100% water seal. So all night, there was just like a drip, drip, drip. And basically where the water drips and just basically hits the bottom of the main drain pipe. But it just created a blockage like right there. So it wasn't widespread. It was just that night.
I see.
Yeah. Well, we were really lucky because then the next week it got really warm. So it ended up, we didn't even have to unfreeze it. It just got warm enough that it did.
Nice.
But the other thing is we didn't get around to actually skirting our house this year. And so, I mean, it snowed so much that we basically have skirting from all the snow, but we figured, you know, with some actual skirting that might have, you know, not.
Yeah. Perhaps.
Yeah, but I think that'll be a big improvement next year. We'll have to worry about it quite.
So what's the like legality of where you are? Are you just kind of under the radar? Like nobody cares? Or how is
we're
that?
We're kind of under the radar. We felt good coming here because they've had tiny houses in the past. We're also just outside the city limits. I'm pretty excited for what the tiny house movement could have in store in Minnesota. I know. So Minneapolis, I want to say probably maybe 3 years ago already, they passed an ordinance so you can have accessory dwelling units in the city of Minneapolis. And then I think last year or maybe the year before that, there was a specific area in St. Paul that you could also do accessory dwelling units. Obviously, that's not including tiny house on wheels. No one has really addressed that. But just this fall, Duluth also passed a ordinance, so now the small lots can be developed for specifically for tiny houses, and that's the verbiage, but it's tiny houses on foundations, so that's kind of exciting, but no one has really taken the stand, I guess, to allow tiny houses on wheels.
Right. You're one step closer. It's a natural next step to say, well, you allow them on foundations, how can we kind of make ones on wheels also fit in?
Yeah, I will also say that while we were still building, I actually moved. So we basically moved 2.5 hours north of where we were building. And during the time that I was up here, because I already moved for my job, I met someone that was building their tiny house in a very obvious spot. And they had had their house there for about 6 months within city limits, and no one had reported them yet. So I think that the general sense that I get is a lot of people just don't care, but, you know, it takes one person to report you. So.
Yeah, totally. Well, I didn't actually know until I, you know, read your bio that, you know, your Instagram handle is Rad Tiny Home, and Rad is rethinking the American dream. Who came up with that, Sophia or Henry?
I guess I did, but right. Kind of unintentionally, because my paper that I wrote for my senior year was, I think, Rethinking the American Dream, Downsizing as a Sustainable Solution. So I kind of looked at the whole just housing market in America, and then specifically looked at the tiny house movement, and then also talked with a bunch of different architects that were doing kind of green building. And that was kind of what I was exploring. So then I don't really know exactly how we came up with it.
Trying to come up with like catchy names.
Yeah,
and I was coming up with really bad acronyms that were just like, cool.
Yeah, then I was kind of just thinking back to how the whole thing started, and I was like, oh, that could work, Rad, Rethinking the American Dream.
So. It pretty much just, she kind of said that and was like, that's way better than anything else we've come up with. Like, yeah, that's for sure, do that.
Nice. Maybe you could talk about, you know, why tiny house living was important to you or is important to you.
Yeah. I guess I just...
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's a multitude of reasons, but I mean, I think one thing that's consistent between the two of us growing up would be, you know, just like having storage places in our homes growing up, where there's just always a lot of stuff, which is normal. I guess that just led to realizing you fill the space you have, kind of seems. And we started to find that with our first one bedroom apartment, where I was just, oh, all of a sudden we have all this stuff that we didn't even realize we were accumulating. I think that was kind of the start of, for me, as far as realizing how important or how impactful it can be to really think about that. And so it was, she can elaborate a little bit more. It was kind of her original idea, and I kind of warmed up to it slowly.
Well, I guess I think really how it started for me is I took a course at Luther that was called Consumption and Its Consequences. So it was an anthropology course, and it was like six students that were in there with me, and it was probably my favorite course that I took. And we just did readings on kind of consumerism and how that movement kind of grew in America. And one of the exercises we had to do was actually take an inventory of all the things that we had. So I literally had to go through it, all the things that I had in my dorm room. And we're living in dorm rooms, which I think the funniest thing to me is that people think it's crazy that people live in tiny houses like this. And I was like, well, you just got out of college, and the whole time you're living in like less square footage per person, and no one thinks that's crazy. So kind of just reevaluating, I think, what really, you know, what our values were. And then my senior year, Dee Williams came to Luther, and she came to my environmental studies like capstone class, and then she gave a talk on her book, The Big Tiny. So Henry didn't go to that, but I did. And I bought her book, and I think I came back to where he was living at the time, and was like, oh, I just went to this talk. It was really, really cool. Like, seems like an awesome idea. And I think the wheels were kind of already going in my head, you know, what do I want my future to look like? And I think, you know, you're kind of raised in this culture of you grow up, you go to college, you get a job, and then you get a house. And especially, I know this is true all over the country, but the housing market is kind of just crazy. I have friends who, you know, take 6-7 months just to get the house that they want, and then have to pay thousands of dollars over the asking price just to get it. And to me, I think I just wanted a different option. So,
And there's nothing wrong with that option either. It's obviously just to each their own. But yeah, I think we kind of figured out what our goals were and what we wanted to get out of our first real place together. I mean, our first apartments, not that those weren't real, but yeah, I think that it was a good time of our lives too. We knew that, you know, that if we were going to do this, this was the right time to do it, and we were able to do it now. So why not just go for it?
And then I think too, sustainability was kind of at the core of it for both of us, mm-hmm. just wanting to kind of reduce your impact. And then, you know, I don't think that tiny living is for everyone by any means, but I think if what we're doing and sharing our story can help make someone kind of rethink maybe how much they need, or, you know, then that would be awesome.
Even in the smallest way, every little thing, every little bit helps.
Totally. I'm curious how you see the tiny house kind of fitting in with your life plans. Like, did you build this with, you know, an end date in mind? Like, at some point we're going to, you know, buy a single family home. Is this a stepping stone, or are you kind of saying, no, we're going to stay here for as long as we can? Or I'm just curious, maybe you could talk about that.
I mean, I think it has a lot to do too with just your circumstances for, you know, your parking situation and things like that.
Uh-huh.
We're kind of rural now, and I really have been enjoying it. We'll see maybe how long that lasts. I think our goal originally was basically, you know, we were renting for, I think, 3 years basically before, uh-huh. after college, before we moved in. And the first place we rented was about 900 square
feet. No, it was 750. Yeah.
Okay. And by the time we left there, you know, after a year, they hiked the rental price on you. So it was already over $1,000. So you're paying more than a dollar a square foot for that. And then kind of in transition to the tiny house, right after we got married, we moved into a...
It was like a 375. So it was roughly 50%.
A studio apartment, and that one was, I think, $750 a month or something like that. And, you know, both being just out of college, we were both working full time, and I was also coaching and also had another job to try to work on, you know, paying for what we wanted to do. And so we were very rarely actually in the apartment that we were renting. It just seemed ridiculous to me that you're putting that much of your paycheck into something that you're not going to ever own, and that you're not even spending very much time there. And we're both, you know, we love being outside and being active. And I would much rather be spending more of my time outside than in a small apartment. So,
and to really address what our kind of goal was, I mean, I think it depends on the day you talk to us, but but, you know, I think we were kind of like, okay, if we, you know, if we were, well, it took about a year longer than I thought it was
to build.
That's how it goes. But, you know, if we could get, I don't know, I think we were hoping, you know, 7-8 years in it, that'd be probably the longest that we'd be able to, we don't really know. I mean, I guess to be really frank, we're thinking we can have at least one kid in here, and, you know, that's a few years down the road still, at least. So, yeah, I think we're here for a while. And then, you know, I don't think that tiny house itself, well, most likely is not ever going to be out of our lives. I think it's going to be, you know, something that we hold on to as guest house, or, you know, just somewhere out, little clubhouse or something, whatever it is.
I mean, I think the dream for most tiny housers is to eventually own your own land and maybe be able to host other people, because that's, mm-hmm. I think the, you know, the tough part for a lot of people is just, where are you going to park it legally? And that obviously hasn't necessarily changed in the last 2 years. There's still not an easy answer to that. And I think one of the interesting things for us is we watched a lot of videos and things like that. I think we stepped into a, I don't even know who built it, but there was like one tiny house at a parade kind of thing that wasn't really, like, it wasn't furnished. It wasn't, you know, you don't walk into it and say, oh, I want to live here. And so really the first tiny house that we ever stepped foot in was an Airbnb in Portland when we were on our way to pick up our trailer from Iron Eagle. So we flew out there, stayed in
a 26 foot Iron Eagle built tiny house.
And then
that was the first real test
we were picking up our trailer. Like, so we're like,
okay, we're glad we can do this.
There was no moment of panic. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah. Honestly, it was the exact opposite. It was like this huge relief. Like, wow, like this is going to, I'm so excited for a space like this to be ours. So, but,
where I was going with that is like, I'd really, and I know some people do this too. And I've seen, you know, a lot of people recommend staying in a tiny house before you go and buy one. Makes a lot of sense. I think we just kind of, you know, embrace the idea and watch so many like YouTube things that by that point I was like, I can envision what it's going to be like without having to actually be in one. But I think if we were able to like rent it too, just to have people be able to try the lifestyle or, you know, understand it a little more, that would be awesome to do someday too.
I just wanted to add one more thing on that exact, on that same, oh, sorry, I keep the table.
That's okay.
I think that, you know, if we can, you know, however long we're in this house is going to be a while, but I think if we can bring to our, whatever that next home is, you know, it's, we still want to live in a very, very reasonable, much smaller than the average size home when we get a slightly more traditional sized home. But I think bringing the things you learn from living in a tiny house, the values, just the day-to-day practices, I think if you can bring that along to the next home, you're not going to just be filling the space. You're not just going to be filling up the garage or whatever that may be. And I think that is the real long-term goal and the plan. And I think one of the things that I'm most excited about, just living here and having this be the norm for a long period of time.
Yeah, I think we'll be here as long as we're comfortable.
Cool. Now, I'm not asking you to speak for like every person who is young who builds a tiny house, but a criticism that I've seen of the tiny house movement is basically like, haha, look at these millennials. They're living in their tiny houses for X amount of time and then they're moving out. Therefore, like, this is a failure, or this, like, therefore it's somehow not valid. And I'm curious, you know, just what you think about that kind of line of criticism.
I mean, first of all, I think the experience that we had building is invaluable. You can't take that away. If we have a house of our own, there's so many things that I learned from building my own house and understanding how systems and things like that work, that if you're renting and never have to deal with anything yourself, good luck. But I've heard that criticism before too. And I think, I mean, when we went into it, part of it too was very much like, well, this is how much we're paying for rent. So if we live in the tiny house for X amount of years, I think it's about 5 years, that money would have just been going to a renter. So anything that we do with it after that point will be like profit, if you want to call it a profit or whatever.
Non-expense.
And I mean, if you look at the movement, I think, you know, D doesn't live in a tiny house anymore. I don't know if I'm outing you, but I know that your main residence is not the tiny house, but I think it definitely serves a purpose. And I think just, you know, for me, the tiny house movement, and, you know, one of the other criticisms is they're getting so big, and ours is definitely a lot larger than a lot of the tiny houses out there. I know it's certainly not the biggest, but we wanted to build something that would be comfortable for us. And not that you're sacrificing things, but, you know, you want to be comfortable. We're two people. We know that we're two people living in a tiny house. A lot, I think, of the kind of pioneers of the movement, we're definitely building them for one person. So I guess to answer your question, I think the experience, you know, is priceless. You can't take that away. So no matter if you're losing money on it or not, I think kind of the heart of the movement for me is just the understanding that there's more to life than things. So,
yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's, you get out of it what you want to get out of it. As long as you're getting out of it what you know, if you're taking something away from it that you didn't have beforehand, like Sophie's, the words that she's used, no one can take that away from you. So, I mean, as long as you're getting something out of it, as long as you consider it a success, then.
I think for a lot of people, it's kind of a stepping stone because, you know, now our expenses are paying the person who owns the land a little bit every month, but it's way less than we were ever paying before. So, you know, to kind of be able to save, and, you know, otherwise you might be trapped in the system where you're paying X amount every month in rent and you aren't ever able to save. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I really like the idea of examining one's cultural influences to kind of see what they're telling you about, you know, how it's okay to live or what's normal. I'm curious if you have any tips or ideas about how somebody can go about doing that in a systematic or a mindful way.
I think for me, part of it was I went to China right after I graduated, and just understanding that, you know, other people in other places and other cultures do things a lot differently than we do in the United States. You know, Americans are kind of known for, you know, the big houses and all the things. And, you know, if you look at, like, I won't call it like happiness studies, but, you know, things along those lines, more is not always linked with happier. And I think that our generation in general is kind of, I think more people are kind of realizing that it's not necessarily always about having the most money. And, you know, they talk about millennials being kind of pains because they want more vacation and they want, you know, benefits and they don't want to work full 40 hours, you know, kind of that kind of thing. But I mean, I don't think that's true at all.
Well, I mean, it can be true.
Well, it can be true of anyone, though.
I'll make sweeping statements.
So what else? Just kind of examining, I guess, what you've been told and, or maybe how you've been raised and kind of questioning it. I know Henry, you know, when we got together, I don't know what really when we were talking about it, but probably when we started talking about the tiny house, it's like, well, you know, I always envisioned kind of a big house because I grew up in a big house. I loved running around in the big house and
playing hide and seek and stuff. You know, it's just like, not that you can't do that here, but, you know, that, yeah, I think it's, I don't know if I'm cutting you off here, but just kind of like, well, Sophie said, examining what you had in the past and, you know, if that's exactly what you want in the future. And if that's the case, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Just questioning why you want what you want. And I think a lot of times we don't stop to think why we think the way we think, or, you know, my biggest thing in any part of life is just, you know, you don't have to agree with everyone, but if you have a reason for what you believe, then I will respect that a lot more than someone who just says or does something and has no reasoning behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, it's kind of like examine what you want and have a reason for it. And that's whatever it is that you want, that's fine. Like, it doesn't have to be a tiny house. Or it could be a tiny house.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think we were pretty lucky that I don't think we had any family members that were like really against what we were doing. A lot of people were like, that's interesting. we kind of, I don't know if we necessarily announced the world or how exactly, but before our wedding, we kind of were, you know, we didn't really do much for registry. We asked if our guests wanted to give us something that, the form in the form of money toward a fund,
financial contribution, yeah, towards our tiny house fund
is what we wanted. And it was obviously a really good time to do that, because I think a lot of times for weddings, I've seen a lot of my friends get married in the last couple of years, you end up with just, you kind of get caught up in the whole thing where, oh, I need to register for all these things because I'm going to have a house and I need X, Y, and Z.
Which sometimes you do.
Well, some, I mean, and that's we teach. Together. That's teach. There's,
well,
to
we each. We lived together for a couple of years before, yeah, before we were married too, so we kind of figured out so just made sense.
But it kind of helped. I think it held us a little accountable too, because we had announced kind of to all of our friends and family that we were building a tiny house. So we kind of had to do it.
Right. In a way, they all became investors in your project.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. One time it was like, I think we were about to walk out the door to like go work on the house, and it just been kind of a rough week or something. I looked there and I was like, no, this was before we committed to the tiny house, before we were buying the trailer and everything. I was like, do we really want to do that? I knew we did, but it was just like, maybe we should think about like, you know, what would the alternative be? And she was kind of like, we told way too many people to back out of this now. Like, we got to do that for sure.
I mean, it was definitely, I think for a long time, it was me kind of like, yeah, we got to do this. We got to do this. And then I'm so much of a planner that I think we could have been planning still at this point if it was up to me. But Henry was really like, no, we need to do this. So I think we both realized after the fact, but we got our trailer, I think in the April of 2017, no, 18. And we didn't really start building until August
into September,
which then our build turned into a winter build, which was definitely not planned, but yeah, that happened.
So yeah, I wanted to ask how long did you think the build would take and how long did it end up taking?
I think we figured what, 6 months?
I don't even know what we figured, but.
Well, I don't know. I think, you know, I framed houses for a couple of years. So I was like, I was really confident with framing. And I think some of the, there's just so many things that I didn't think that we, well, it's like, you don't really think about it till we have all our frame about to start. And then it's like, oh, we don't have our windows. We need to know how big our windows are going to be before we really do any of our framing. So, you know, it's just those details that come about, and you know
very obvious after the fact what you should have been doing and planning, but when once you're actually doing it, you're like, okay,
so
basically
wound up total was wound up being about a year and about 4 months.
Yeah, so I mean there were some logistical things that kind of played against us. Basically we built about an hour, so
it's not our fault.
We built about an hour away from where we were living. And Henry was working Saturdays, and I think so was I. So I was working extra shifts, doing all sorts of things.
So it turned up
so we had 1 day, Sundays, to build. So we started building, and then it was also a summer that I think we had 8 or 10 weddings to go to. So we automatically couldn't build those weeks.
Yeah.
So just, I think, it got very monotonous because we weren't getting very far, and you're spending an hour or 2 hours a day just driving there and back. And then because we built outside, we also had the tarp on both ends. So it was like,
especially once the framing went up, that tarping was, you know, an hour. It took at least an hour to put it up. At the end of the day, you know, half an hour to take it off. At the
end of the day. And then on top of that, we didn't have a very good, we had storage, but not super close to, 200 yards from our building, which is, you know, not terrible, but would have been nicer if we could have had a staging area a little closer.
Oh, I need that screwdriver. I need that bit or whatever it was. We always bring stuff over, but it's like you forget this one thing.
And we had to run the power out and then put it away. So there was just like probably a good 3-ish hours of things that had to be done to be building, but not actually building. And then on top of that, our closest Menards or like home improvement type store was like,
it was about a half hour away.
Oh boy.
So yeah.
Forgot something. It was like, all right, well.
So now I'm actually really impressed that you got it done in a year and 4 months, given those circumstances.
Well, so I think we should end that with, so we started doing the build once a day. Once a week,
really in August,
yeah. And then
once a week
in January,
right at the end of January into early February,
I quit the job that I was at because we had figured out where we wanted to move it, and that was going to be 2.5 hours north. And so I had found a new job up there, but I was going to take a hiatus to try to work on the house full time. I think it was like 3 weeks or so. And Henry did the same thing.
I quit my job,
and then immediately the week after that, it was negative 15 to negative 25 for a week and a half straight.
Something off like and that. On, more like 4 or 5 days. There's one straight week where we couldn't work on it at all. It was just way too cold.
Wow.
But yeah,
it was not the best planning.
So it was just, it was a combination of us not planning well, some logistical things, and then, you know.
So we there was about a month that we worked on it like full time, and then it went back to nights and.
Yeah, and then Sophie started commuting, and I wound up keeping a job working remotely, and so I would work during the day, and then in the evenings into night I would work, and then if Sophie would,
then he'd send me photo updates, and I would say, okay, that looks good.
So on the weekends we would work together on it. After that, pretty much had all Saturday and Sundays usually to work on it. And then I was
Friday and Saturday.
But yeah, Sophie would come back on Friday evenings. So half day Fridays. So then, we were able to work on it together on the weekends, and I was able to put in some hours in the weekends.
Yeah. Sometimes I remember about my build, I felt like when I could string together multiple days, that the momentum and just the amount that you can accomplish in 3 or 4 back-to-back days of building, just, you don't have to spend that time kind of being like, what was I working on? What was I trying to figure out? Like, you just get right back into it.
Yeah. It's also mental too. You kind of, when you're only getting a little bit done, you know, and then you wait a week and then you have to get another little bit done. Mentally, it's straining, and it's stressful to know that you're progressing that slowly. And I think that, like you said, the momentum is both on the projects and what you're working on, and both and just mentally, emotionally.
I would say the other interesting, it was kind of nice at the beginning because, like I said, we had done a lot of planning, but then when it gets down to it and you're like trying to figure out, you know, strapping. So it'd be, you know, we'd work on Sunday and then immediately I'd start researching what we had to do the next week or how exactly we're going to get that done. So it was kind of nice that you had a little bit of time to prepare for what was coming. But I also joked, I think, with Henry at one point, because we're in Minnesota and it gets so dark so quickly in the winter that I think the majority of our build was actually done in the dark, because by the time we were not particularly good at waking up early, because I think we just both tend to be night owls and we were out working on the house till 1 a.m. sometimes.
Because I kind of got in that phase where I'd wake up, work, and work on the house until I could, you know, basically stay awake till. And then I would go to bed. And so I kind of got in this late routine. So then it just kind of became
so
the norm.
We did a lot of building actually in the dark.
Impressive. Well, the house looks really, really great. Like, the finishes are beautiful. You did a really nice job trimming it out and doing all the interior stuff.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
That was mostly Henry. I don't think he put up every single.
No, you put
I put up
you
like
put
two
up the,
things.
Like the six pieces in the bath.
But I did get the pleasure of spackling and sanding every single.
I think I spackled like, I don't know, 4 boards, the whole length.
Like, I did all the spackling.
She was a trooper there.
Well, one thing that I like to ask all my guests is, what are 2 or 3 resources that helped you out along the way that you would want to share with our listeners?
Have you heard of, there's this little thing called YouTube. That was pretty, this YouTube was really helpful. Honestly, there's so many people out there working on different things, whether it's a tiny house or not, but tiny house specific videos out there that like, this is really helpful.
Well, I think, and also just to try to figure out kind of how we wanted to design it, just watching a lot of Living Big in a Tiny House.
Yeah.
I think really helped us kind of hone in on what we liked and what we didn't like about different designs. And then one thing I'll say for sure, which I'm sure has been mentioned, but Macy Miller's Tiny House People Facebook group, there's, you know, 10 or however many, I don't know how long it's been around, but there's like 42,000 people in that group. And so if people are asking me questions about builds, you know, I'll usually answer them and then also say, go check out this Facebook page and put whatever you're looking for in the search box. And usually you'll find like threads upon threads of other people asking the exact same question. So that's awesome. And then I think
Pose new questions.
You can post questions. And we'll give you a little shout out too, Ethan, because we got your tiny house decisions, I think mid-build probably. So, you know, a little late. But I do think, it's a super useful.
Early on in the build.
Yes, but it is a super useful resource if you are just starting there's so many decisions that you don't even know that are decisions. And one of the things I think about our build is that you can't know what you don't, or you don't, what is it?
You don't know what you don't know.
Yeah, you can't know what you don't know. And so, you know, just kind of thinking through all the things that you're going to need to know it, and having a resource that kind of lays out for you is great. And then, I mean, I mentioned Dee in here, I think too, is kind of the inspiration for me.
She's wonderful.
Have you been back in touch with Dee at all? Does she know that she inspired your tiny house build?
Yeah, she does. We actually, so Henry is good friends with Dee's nephew who...
He was the best man in our wedding.
Who lives in her tiny house.
He was the one that that brought, basically, it was his idea, I think, to bring Dee
to
the lecture.
So maybe.
At Luther. Because he went to Luther College with us. And yep. He was environmental studies with Sophie. And so that was how that connection originally started.
But so we got our trailer from Iron Eagle. And so we actually went out there and visited with Dee and got to see, is it the Don Vardo is her second? Yeah.
Yeah, the so tiny, really, the really tiny one.
Yes. Yeah. Which was, and Henry's friend
our
actually.
Friend and his girlfriend, they stayed in there for like a month.
Wow.
That were from some funny stories from that. But yeah, we got our trailer. And then that day we went up.
We pulled it up to Dee's house. So if you've seen our trailer. And,
you know, she was like marveling at it and checking it out. She's like, oh man, like they've come so far.
Well, I mean, that's her design that she helped them develop.
But just like, you know, seeing seeing it brand new and seeing it, you know, in our hands and like how excited we were about it. It was pretty special to be able to share that day with her. Was a lot of fun.
Yeah. She's and awesome. I know you said two, but I'll also mention, so Isabel Nagelbrace, who is also a podcast guest. Yeah. We used her healthy
home kit.
Mm-hmm. And so we built with pretty great materials.
Yeah, that's an understatement.
They're
amazing. They're awesome.
We did our house wrap in like -5 and it actually worked. So
wow.
I still have some tape on one of my like sweatshirts that I've washed like 10 times and it's just like, oh, I forgot those.
Yeah, those tapes are amazing.
And then I guess this isn't necessarily a resource, but just I think one of the things we really wanted to do in our build was incorporating local materials and as much as we could. So like our countertops, we got from a place that was literally local, down the street from where Henry was working at the time.
Local wood shop that they get most of their materials locally as much as they can.
And I think that was just an awesome way to kind of connect with the community that we're going to be moving to, because at one point I brought the planks that are our living room planks, the birch, from a sawmill that was in northern Minnesota. So I picked them up from work and drove back down to the cities with them. So it's kind of
so fun. In conclusion, we got living big in a tiny house. Go check that out. What's the Facebook group?
Tiny House People
on Facebook. And then Isabel.
Yeah. Shoot, I had another one.
There was Dee Williams.
Yeah.
Dee Williams. Can't forget about her. She's amazing.
I would just say if you want inspiration, read her book. We had, I think Henry's mom and my mom both read her book.
They loved it.
And
it's just a good read, whether you like tiny house or not.
Right. I think that just gave them some understanding as to why we were doing what we were doing too. So.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, Henry and Sophia Youngbauer, thank you so much for being guests on the show. It was great to connect.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ethan. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you so much to Sophia and Henry Youngbauer for being guests on the show. You can find the show notes, including photos of Sophia and Henry's amazing self-built tiny house at thetinyhouse.net/107. Again, that's thetinyhouse.net/107. And if you're bored, don't forget to check out and get yourself a copy of Color Me Tiny, my tiny house coloring book for children and adults of all ages. You can learn more and get your own copy at thetinyhouse.net/color. Again, that's thetinyhouse.net/color. Well, that's all for this week. I'm your host, Ethan Waldman, and I'll be back next week with another episode of the Tiny House Lifestyle Podcast.